Monster Man, Episode 408, Gloomwing and Noel.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we'll be continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. But before we do that, some news. Another thing that I contributed to is now out on Kickstarter. That is Nock Magazine, issue number 3, that miscellany of different OSR articles, adventures, monsters, and what have you. I am merely one of a large number of contributors, and you should go ahead and check it out. I'll put a link down in the show notes. I feel like people who enjoy my show and people who would enjoy Nock probably overlap significantly, so definitely give it a look. I have contributed a monster, so I'm, you know, again, this is the third issue of Nock that has something written by me in it, but it does have something illustrated by me in it, which is not usual. Although, you know, I said that, but actually, I have photographs, which is what this is, in both the Lion Rampant books from History and Games Lab, so actually, I guess, I guess that is part of what I do, although I would not say it's an area where I excel. Anyway. If you like this show, you probably might like Nock, so go ahead and give it a look. Once again, links in the show notes. Speaking of crowdfunding, as you may know, it is Zine Month. Every year in February, there used to be a thing called Zine Quest, and this year, Kickstarter, who hosted the event, have moved it to August, which clashes with Gen Con and kind of messed up the schedules of a lot of people who've been planning Zine Quest releases, so they decided to go ahead and do it anyway. Some of those events are on Kickstarter, and some of them are on other crowdfunding platforms, and I'm going to try my hand at one of these other crowdfunding platforms, so I'll tell you more shortly, but this middle of this month, I'm releasing the Meganium Mine Murders, which is a sandbox mystery scenario, if that makes any sense, a clue box. It's going to be statted for Old School Essentials, and like I say, it's going to be available in mid-February with a crowdfunding campaign that runs for a couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to sharing it with people. I've been working on it off and on for a long time. You know, no pressure, but I think if you like this show, it might be the kind of thing you like. Okay, let's take a look at our two monsters for today's episode. First, we have the Gloomwing. Now, we've seen the Gloomwing before. It was in Monster Manual 2, basically a giant spooky moth. It has a larval form called the Tenebrous Worm, and in this edition of the rules, the Tenebrous Worm and the Gloomwing are combined into a single entry. An excellent choice. The giant moth with like hypno disc type symbols on its wings that hypnotizes you by flapping its wings is something that I could have sworn I had seen in other media. So I mentioned this last time that it seemed like a familiar idea, I think. This time I dug in a bit more deeply. I found references to an example of this type of moth in the TV show The Worst Witch. And in the Adrian Tchaikovsky novel, Empire in Black and Gold, both of those definitely post-date this book. And of course, the original Monster Manual too. And the similar idea of the Slake Moth, which is another kind of like psychic moth, in the novel Perdido Street Station by China Mieville, which also post-dates the Gloomwing. And indeed, I've read, although only secondhand, that the Slake Moth has been acknowledged as being sort of directly inspired by the Gloomwing. So it's not any of those. And I gather there's some mention of moths stealing memories in the novel Silver on the Tree, which is part of the Darkest Rising series by Susan Cooper. I have read all those books, you know, when I was a kid, but I don't really remember much about them. And from the description, they steal memories, which isn't exactly what the Gloomwing does. It kind of puts people into a trance, and then its friends eat them. So no closer to where I thought I was familiar with the image of a hypnotic moth from, because in my mind, like, I'm visualizing the image in kind of like a Jim Steranko style kind of illustration. So it's probably not from any of these novels, but who knows? I could be completely wrong. You know, I could be just imagining it. Anyway, this is a pretty good monster, but I think I said pretty much everything I was likely to say about it last time. There is a Tony DiTerlizzi illustration here, but this is actually kind of one of my, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just illustrating a subject that's not all that exciting. And furthermore, it's a color picture of what is essentially a monochrome creature, so there's that. I mean, it's fine, but it's, you know, it's not that different from the original one. Now, we have got some changes in the Knoll. Well, kind of. We first encountered the Knoll back in Monster Manual 1, and then in, I think, Monster Manual 2? Don't quote me if it's Fiend Folio, I'm wrong, but I think it's in Monster Manual 2. We encountered the Flind, its smarter, nunchuck-wielding cousin. And also we saw it in a Dragon Magazine article that we did in one of the bonus episodes. Also, Flinds are lawful evil, while Knolls are chaotic evil, which does kind of tie into the idea that Flinds kind of represent, like, the Knollish government. So this is pretty much the previous monster, but it's given a little bit of elaboration, and there are some little details that are fun. I like the idea, this may have been in the first one, but I didn't remember it, that you find Knolls working with other humanoids, but only if there's sort of parity of strength between them. So you may find, like, an equal number, or approximately equal numbers of orcs and Knolls working together, but you'll never find a large band of Knolls working with a small group of orcs, or vice versa, because if a large group of Knolls was to encounter a small band of orcs, they just eat them. And if they were to encounter a large band of orcs, they would just be eaten by them. Or, you know, run away from them. So it's only when they're of approximately equal strength that they're actually able to cooperate. This is a fun little detail, especially if you have somebody who is knowledgeable about these creatures, you know, your local guide or like a ranger who has favorite enemy humanoids or whatever. Because, you know, it lets you actually make a potentially useful inference, right? Like, well, we found some Knolls and an orc. Well, that means that if there are, you know, so many number of Knolls, well, there are also going to be a comparable size of number of orcs, because I know how they work together. So that's kind of neat. I gotta say that the real star of this entry is the illustration, which shows a Knoll with quite like a thoughtful expression, wearing I guess what's meant to be like mail or scale armor over its torso and sort of groin area, and then it has an ornate sword on its belt. It's holding a halberd and has a ragged red cloak kind of streaming out behind it, and plus also some like a necklace of teeth and other artifacts like that, and some like cloth wraps around its arms and legs. Those turn up in illustrations everywhere, and like, unless they're all boxers, I don't really know what that's all about, but never mind. They look cool, which, okay, I guess I do know what they're about. And it definitely gives this Knoll, maybe it's the posture, maybe it's the cloak billowing out behind, kind of reminds me of a sagum or military cloak, which are sort of stereotypically red, even though I don't think they actually had to be red. This Knoll looks very, like, quote-unquote civilized. And it made me think of, like, so there's a description of Knoll says that they hate manual labor. They hunt, and they'll overhunt an area, right? So they'll move into an area and they will hunt in it, not until it's like sustainably hunted, but until it's depleted, and then move on. And it can sometimes take years for local wildlife and resources to return, but the Knolls don't care. They're not here anymore. And that's assuming they haven't eaten all the people. And also, they're kind of like sadists who love to hear their prey scream. So they said that they prefer certain types of prey because they suffer more enjoyably, which is pretty horrible. So we are used to thinking of Knolls as kind of barbarians, kind of as bullies. And this definitely fits the stereotype of sort of barbarians, you know, that they kind of, you know, they move into an area and they just sort of like pillage it and move on. But they actually, you know, historically speaking, I don't think that's really what happens. Like, obviously, kind of quote unquote barbarian peoples get into conflicts with settled locals over land and things like that, but usually because those barbarians want to, quote-unquote barbarians, want to settle in those regions. Or if you're, you know, steppe nomads is what are the people that you're calling barbarians this week, to enter into some kind of, like, structured political tribute arrangement, which is not what Knolls do. So what Knolls are kind of reminding me of in this instance is that they're kind of like aristocrats, right? Like, they want to use up the bounty of the land, they want to steal all your sheep, they want to profit from the work of others, but they don't work, and they pride themselves on, like, their strength and their fighting ability, but they don't ever produce anything useful. I mean, this is perhaps a particularly lefty interpretation of a medieval aristocrat, but, you know, I mean, I'm just saying. The problem with this is, I guess, that it's, like, that metaphor is already better done by the vampire, right? The guy who lives in the big castle is a blood-sucking parasite. Like, literally. So I don't know that I would do it with Knolls, but I do love the idea that Knolls, who we are sort of conditioned to view as scumbags, right? Like, Knolls are a scumbag monster. They might be dangerous, but, like, you fear them, but you'd never respect them. But I like the idea that they sort of have pretensions and they think of themselves as an elite because all they do is, like, hunt and feed. And, you know, humans or whoever, halflings, are the poor suckers who spend all this time looking after the land until this band of their natural betters comes along to relieve them of it. I don't know, just something about this guy's, like, dignified posture and fancy red cloak and ornate sword made me think, like, oh yeah, this guy thinks he's pretty great. And that was a fun image. So the Deterlitzy illustration added a little something to the Knoll. It's still ridiculous that Flint's use nunchucks. I don't know why it's ridiculous. Obviously, they're a real weapon. It's perfectly possible that, you know, these guys could use a fantasy equivalent, but it's just sort of like, that's how you get to be the elite in Knoll society. It's like, you're smart enough to use nunchucks. Everybody else just has, like, spears and axes and things, but no, you've mastered this deadly weapon. Whatever. I mean, there's just something silly about it. It appeals to me nonetheless. This is an interesting example of a monster that is not, like, fundamentally all that changed from its Monster Manual 1 version, other than, like, consolidating a souped-up later version into the same entry, which, good, keep it up. But somehow the changing the presentation has actually changed the way that I sort of think about this creature. So that's nice. You know, little twist on an established classic, thanks to a great Tony Deterlitzy illustration, which is what we've come to expect from this illustrator. All right, in our next episode, well, middle of the week, patrons at the $2 and higher level will be getting a new episode of Patron Deities, in which we conclude our series on Indian mythology. Also, check the Patreon feed for a survey asking you what you'd like me to cover next. And then at the end of the week, we've got a listener request special episode brought to you by one of my patrons. And that is all about monsters of the air and, like, effectively using flying monsters in your games. So I hope that you'll join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters. Because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.